Well, it doesn't ever slow down for JMU Sports as we begin another episode of the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin here with Katie Harper in the studio in the newsroom. And like I say, it doesn't slow down because it seems like it's going to be the off season for some of these teams. But we've got basketball recruiting in full swing, spring football game coming up later this week, and even some big stuff happening for baseball, softball, lacrosse. Getting into their regular season home finale this weekend. It'll be a big one for them. But let's start with baseball because it's just been kind of just such an up and down season for the Diamond Dukes as they've exceeded expectations in some ways. But then when those expectations get high, you get a little bit of a disappointment, like dropping a series on the road to ODU. When it looked like they had a pretty decent chance to maybe go down to Norfolk and get a series win and get some momentum in conference play.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to use this term right now because it's very fitting for baseball. This team this year has been very hit or miss all season. And I know we talked about it last week that their record on the road is rough, especially when you compare it to how dominant they've been in Harrisonburg at home. So to see them go down there, and they got runs. Their offense is there when they need it to be, but it's just right now this pitching rotation just can't seem to find almost any sort of consistency. I had been saying that Donovan Burke is about the only pitcher where I think there's a confidence of, okay, when he's on the mound, this team can win. And it proved again this weekend. The only game that they won was Saturday when he started. He can go long into games. He can pitch really, really well long into games. And then when you look around the other guys in that rotation, it's just been somewhat of a rough season for a lot of these guys. Ryan Murphy, he started Friday. He had a rough outing. Todd Mazzocchi opened the season as the Friday starter, and he just hasn't been able to find any of his pitches, it seems like, at times. He's had a really, really up and down season. And I think this bullpen and this starting rotation of the pitchers has been what's really, really hindering what this team can do and win and get their wins and stuff like that.
Yeah, the pitching you talk about, like you say, it hasn't been consistent. I think consistency is like the best word because, yeah, I watched that game too that they won in Norfolk, and they got such an amazing performance out of the bullpen too. You talk about Donovan Burke starting, but Max Kuhl coming in, like, I was just really, really impressed with what he did in game two. But they just did not have it consistently throughout the weekend, and let ODU's offense kind of come to life.
What's interesting that you bring up Max Kuhl, because other than Donovan Burke, I would have said that Max Kuhl was the only pitcher who had really given consistent performances as a starter throughout the season. He was primarily used as the starting guy on Saturdays. And then a few weeks ago, things were moved around. Burke moved from Sunday to Saturday, and Kuhl moved from starting into the bullpen. And Eikenberry had said the following week, he was like, we really, really like having Max Kuhl as an option on back-to-back days. And I understand from his point of view why they like having Max Kuhl as an option on a Saturday and a Sunday or on a Friday and a Sunday. And it's because he does give you consistency out of the bullpen. But at the same time, if your team isn't getting that lead from the start, Max Kuhl in the bullpen isn't necessarily going to be the most useful pitcher, because at that point you may be down several runs.
Yeah. Be interesting to see if they end up bouncing back, how that works out for JMU baseball. But this weekend, they really need to start winning some conference series. You look at where they are, I think 21-14 overall, still solid RPI, still, I think, giving themselves a chance to play their way into the postseason if they can finish strong. They've still had those quality wins from early in the season we talked about, and opportunities with Maryland and Virginia Tech coming up. The table is set for them to do something this year, to make a statement, and, frankly, for Marlon Arkenberry to kind of secure his self as, you know, a guy who's going to get another chance with the new athletic director coming in, everything like that. It's going to be a big, big few weeks for them coming up. As we speak, they play at VMI tonight as we record this on Wednesday afternoon. And then a home series against Georgia Southern. It's not the Georgia Southern from a couple years ago, but I think that's going to be a huge one for them coming up at home.
At home, that's one that they need to win at least two and maybe take the whole series. That's just one you need to get your momentum back. And it's been talked about throughout the season, post-game with some of the players and with Eichenberry. They've gone on some win streaks, and they feel the momentum when they're there, but then all of a sudden they drop that one game. And the one game, they may bounce back and win another, but then once they lose one, they struggle to kind of regain that momentum and do it in doing so quickly. So to get this home series at a very, very important time, I think they need to take two, maybe three, to really get going again.
Yeah, across the complex at Veterans Memorial Park, Jamie's softball team has also played extremely well at home. There's been a marked difference between playing at home and on the road for the Jamie's softball team. They've now won five straight at Bank of the James Field, sweeping Marshall in a conference series, sweeping doubleheader with Longwood yesterday. But they've had their struggles on the road. Part of that is playing some good teams on the road, playing in good tournaments early in the season, and then they get swept at Louisville right before this winning streak. But the schedule is setting up nicely for the Jamie softball team. I keep saying this over and over again, that they're a game out of third right now, and they don't have a team with a winning record in Sunbelt play left on the schedule. The opportunity is really there for them to move up the standings and, you know, maybe get as high as a third or fourth seed in the Sun Belt tournament if they can finish out strong.
It's definitely doable for them, and I think they showed a lot over the weekend and then even into the doubleheader yesterday with Longwood. They showed some grit and some just ability to fight back because they went down against Marshall a few times, and they still found a way to come back, run ruled them, and they did a lot, and they showed what this team, I think, can do in the future. And so to have the remaining schedule that they have, I think that's – I know we've said it for baseball too, where it should go in their favor, but I think for softball even more so, with just being able to rack up some wins late in the season after playing what was a tough first half.
Yeah, I think this particular series going down to App State this weekend is going to be a big one. It's one you think – you'd hope you could sweep. It's always a lot to ask a team to win three games in a row, especially on the road. But, you know, App State just has not been great this season. I think it's an opportunity for JMU to continue to build a lot of momentum. Reed Butler's the Sun Belt Player of the Week this week after they move her to the leadoff spot, which is the leadoff spot for JMU softball is kind of like one of those, like, yeah, different programs have different things where it's like, you know, sometimes it's like a team wears a special number, or, you know, if you're like, you know, the 12th man at Texas A&M or whatever, all the different things. That's kind of like a tradition within a program. For JMU, it's, you know, if you get moved into the leadoff spot, it really means something because JMU's traditionally put their best hitter there. You know, you can go back to Kate Gordon, who was like taking the ball out of the park almost every time she stepped up to the plate, you know, late in her senior year. She's batting leadoff instead of cleanup because that's what Lauren Laporte likes to do. And, you know, basically the idea is, you know, instead of focusing on if you're going to have people on base in the first inning with your cleanup hitter, she's trying to get her best hitter an extra at bat. And she probably has people on base for her later innings. So they're focusing more, I think, on like the big picture when it comes to the batting order than the first inning. But it's been a big thing, and it's the first year in a while they've kind of bounced people around and not stuck with a leadoff hitter. But Reed Butler gets put in there, fifth-year senior. I think it's kind of an honor for her. And she stepped up and played really, really well here in these last five games when they've got this winning streak going.
Yeah, she was there when they needed her. And I think, like you said, when I saw that she had gotten moved to the leadoff too, all I thought about was just how long she had been with the program and to finally kind of have that moment. So it was neat to see. And just her performance, especially I think over the weekend against Marshall. I mean, she got the Sun Belt Player of the Week, so would make sense. But yeah, just to see how she kind of at times against Marshall really, I think, led the charge and kind of helped them fight back in those moments where they got down. I think that's important to have a player like that on your team that has the experience, has been around the program for years. And I think to see it all kind of really, really coming full to the front of the stage in her senior or in her final year is really awesome.
Yeah. And it seems to be coming together a little bit. They're figuring out the lineup. They're getting hits, timely hits throughout the order and doing it now as the pitching kind of comes together, and they get more of this, I'm trying to think of the right word. It's not like a piggyback thing, but they're pitching by committee in a lot of games. Just going into the game saying, hey, you got two innings, and getting through them that way, which is another different kind of look for JMU, where so many years they've had one or two very dominant pitchers that they were going to ride for as much as they could. Definitely a different look, and I think it's come from seeing that in the Sun Belt a little bit too. Like, they've had losses to teams like Louisiana in the past couple of years where they were switching pitchers and just keeping them completely off balance. And I think Lauren kind of took that, lesson from what it did to their offense and said, we actually have a staff where we could do that a little bit this year. And it's been a different change, and it's worked out for them, especially on later games in a series.
It does, like you said, it does depend on who's available on the staff, because I mean, you think back to the World Series run and how heavily Odyssey Alexander was relied on as the pitcher throughout pretty much that entire postseason. You saw Alyssa Humphrey from time to time, but it was really kind of Odyssey's show. And so to see that now where you're able to just, I always find it interesting with softball, the ability to like take people out and in, mm-hmm. compared to maybe a sport like baseball where they come out, they're out. And so to be able to use the pitching by committee, it's definitely, I think it's a really cool element too that it brings to the game. And I think it's a really cool element of like gamesmanship and how, and I think it really kind of shows the intelligence of a head coach too, to be able to kind of properly use pitchers at the time they're most needed.
Yeah, and I wonder if, even if Lauren could go back in time, if she would look at like having Odyssey Alexander and may have said occasionally, you know what, second time through the order, we're going to go with somebody else and then bring her back and really keep them off balance. And, hard to second guess too much when you lose four games all season and stuff. But, I do think she's really starting to like that idea of different styles of pitchers keeping the batters off balance, throughout the game, and, maybe seeing somebody different each time through the order. It seems to be working out pretty well for them that, they're frankly just not as talented quite as a couple of teams in the Sun Belt right now, but they do seem to be getting closer to getting back to being the top tier type team in their conference, which definitely a building block, I think, for softball right now.
Yeah, I know we've said it in the past few weeks with how young this team is, but I think in about a year or two, this team is going to be mm-hmm. one of those ones that you never know. Maybe they're the ones that ends like Louisiana's winning streak of how many, just the unreal number of series wins in a row. But I think this team has the pieces to be good in a few years. It's more so just getting the games under their belt.
Yeah, and I think we've seen over the past 2 years that the Sun Belt was such a step up in competition softball wise, even beyond Louisiana. You knew that there was going to be that team at the top every year that was going to be tough. But I think a lot of people didn't realize that it's a lot deeper league. You're not just going to dominate the bottom of this league the way you did in the CAA. It was a joke at times, frankly, in the CAA, like how much better they were than teams in the same conference. And, It's really a deep softball league.
Yeah, I think in the CAA you had Hofstra, and then that was really the only team that was ever giving JMU kind of a run for its money. So now to be frank, jumping up to the Sun Belt and maybe having to get knocked down a few pegs when you realize how deep that competition is, I think it helps you in the long run when you do get that postseason berth again, because you have that more consistent top level opponent week after week than what you did in the CAA. And that's, I mean, to say that JMU made that World Series run while they were still in the CAA says a lot, because they weren't necessarily being tested all the time. So I think now where it's week after week, game after game, and they're facing top opponents, that's something that once this team is a little bit older, I think will benefit them, especially late in the season.
Yeah, I will never forget in a conference championship game that year of the College World Series run. We're talking about a conference championship game. The other team is celebrating just fouling pitches off and making contact. It looked like a little league, and to me it was like these are teams that are supposed to be on the same level, and it was incredible how much better JMU was than the rest of the conference that year in particular. So it's definitely been a huge difference changing leagues softball wise. Changing leagues basketball wise has worked out pretty well for the Dukes over the past couple of years. Now with JMU men coming off their Sun Belt championship, NCAA tournament run, and Preston Spradlin in with his whole staff has been hot on the recruiting trail. They get a lot of guys in for visits here the last several days, and it's paying off with some commitments too. Start with, I think, what most people are kind of looking at as a headliner, Justin Taylor transferring from Syracuse. He's from Charlottesville. He's a kid who's been very familiar with JMU because his mother played here. His mom, Carrie, has remained a big JMU fan of a lot of sports, you know, throughout her time. So just a pretty cool story to see JT end up back in Harrisonburg. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do for JMU on the court, just because he, coming off a season where he started 32 games for Syracuse, started every game he played in, but was considered kind of a disappointing season for him personally, averaged 5 points a game, but was playing out of position the entire season. They basically had to play him at the four, or, you know, go with kind of a four guard lineup where he's guarding a four a lot of times. He didn't shoot anywhere near as well as he did his freshman year. Definitely seemed like a time where he needed a change of pace, and he's going to get that coming home basically.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting one, especially when you see like those deep family ties with JMU. And I know you had shared it on, or I had seen it from you on social media, about you'd been watching him since high school. And this is someone who, I know a lot of the time we do talk about the transfer portal of looking for new opportunities. And a lot of the time there are people who maybe are looking for just, in today's world, NIL deals and whatnot. But he is someone who I think truly, truly, truly is someone who needs it and will benefit from a change of scenery and kind of have that jump to his career. And I think, like you had said, this is a kid who he can find his shot again, and you expect him to find his shot again and kind of find that comfort on the basketball court. And so I think this was definitely a really big pickup. I know, judging by just social media, a lot of people were really, really excited about this one. And so I think it will be a fun one to see. And I know people want to see more of him offensively, but I also think the defense side that he brings will be definitely beneficial to the team. And X is still on the team. He's a really good defensive player. So I think it will be an interesting mix to watch how all of these guys that are slowly starting to come in from the portal will be pieced together.
Yeah, and the people who aren't as familiar with his family, his mom, Carrie, was Carrie Borshot when she was in college. She played for Sheila Mormon in the 80s, kind of, you know, on some of those early teams where JMU was kind of establishing itself as a women's basketball power. Got a couple degrees from JMU, law degree from Richmond. So, you know, if anybody wants to give her a hard time about that, I think she definitely bleeds purple though. But, you know, so she's got those ties. His sister, Ashley, played at William and Mary. So big time basketball family, you know, Virginia basketball family, the CAA ties. I think they're all really excited to to see him wind up at JMU. So that's going to be big thing, and big time talent, because, you know, you look at JMU's roster now, there's not a ton of guys officially on the roster, but I believe this would probably be the first time they've ever had two people at the same time who were four-star, you know, top 125 type recruits out of high school at the same time. With Quincy Allen, at least, you know, appears like he's coming back. He hasn't entered the transfer portal or anything. He was a top 100 recruit coming out of high school. Justin Taylor, when he chose Syracuse, he chose them over Butler and North Carolina, where that was basically like his final three. Like, so that's the level of you know, player he was coming out of high school and got minutes and playing time in the ACC right away. I think it's just really all about, you know, fit. And you know, right now, the talent level is looking like it's going to be similar to what it was last year, with some spots still left to fill. But you got that. You got Eddie Ricks from Morehead State is committed now after taking his visit. He's following the staff from Morehead State. He was a three-star recruit who I mean, I think it was a sort of a down year in Tennessee. There weren't a lot of guys coming out of Memphis or anything that year, but he was the number one recruit in Tennessee coming out of high school. Like, that's you know, not the kind of guy you typically has wound up at JMU over the years. So Spradlin and his staff seem to really be carrying the momentum from what JMU did this year, and also carrying the momentum of what their staff did at Morehead State.
Yeah, I know coaching changes oftentimes bring a lot of stress and craziness, but with JMU having two major coaching changes this year, one of my favorite things to look at has been how both of these coaches have been able to recruit even after coming from relatively smaller schools. And obviously Morehead State and Spradlin, he had success there and got to the tournament, and Chesney had success at Holy Cross. But I think it really has said a lot about who these coaches are that Jeff Warren hired, that they've come in and in their first offseason are bringing in players that are not only good, but they're the type of players that you would then expect JMU to maintain the same level of success, if not improve and grow on it, that they had a season before. So I think it's interesting to watch, and he's done a really, really good job, I would say, already. And again, like you had pointed out, there are still spots to fill on that roster.
Yeah, and they're going to have to find somebody who plays in the post, I'm sure, coming up. That'll be something that happened. But, I mean, you hit on something I know we're probably going to hear about and talk about, you know, for the next several months, the comparisons between Chesney and Spradlin as being the new guys in the high-profile positions here at JMU. But you look at what these guys were able to do recruiting at places that didn't have the same level of resources and fan support and everything else that JMU does. And, you know, Chesney's, we see kind of all spring long, we see Chesney's guys from Holy Cross and what they're doing as they get ready for the NFL draft and they go to the combine, everything. And he was recruiting that level of talent to Holy Cross of all places and in the Patriot League, at a school that traditionally didn't have much going on in football. That they've improved their facilities a little bit, but you know, they play in an ancient stadium, and just not what he's got at his disposal here at JMU. Spradlin, it's very similar. You know, Morehead State is not an easy place to win the way that he's won. It's, you know, kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's not a big school. It's not a school with a huge fan base or history, or you know, facilities. I heard, you know, Dominic Lombardo, I think he said this to Dave Riggert or somebody recently, said, you know, when they were recruiting at Morehead State, if it wasn't somebody who was going to give you a hug on graduation, it wasn't something they were talking about to recruits because, you know, they didn't have anything to sell just as far as, you know, the program and the facilities. But they're able to get guys like, you know, Mark Freeman, who's player of the year in that conference. Johnny Broom, they recruit him out of high school. And then you see him become a star at Auburn after he transfers. But they sign that guy like that out of high school. Now having what JMU offers at their disposal, especially on, you know, on the basketball side, where facility-wise they're ahead of the teams that they're trying to recruit against. I just think, you know, that comparison is going to be very interesting. And Bourne seemed to kind of really go out of his way to find people who had success at a place like that.
A lot of these commitments too, I think it really says a lot about not necessarily the school that they committed to, like we had pointed out with Holy Cross and Morehead State being a little bit smaller, but it does say a lot about like the head coaches personally, probably, and who they are just as a coach. Because like you had mentioned with Chesney, a lot of his guys, like he has guys from Holy Cross that are, were at the NFL draft combine and are going to possibly be drafted, not this time next week, it's this time next week in a day or 2 weeks. I have no concept of what time it is right now. Very soon, in the next couple of weeks, we'll be drafted into the NFL potentially. But then you also have guys who committed to that program at Holy Cross that now they've followed Chesney down here. And I'm talking about Jacob Dobbs. It's a guy who was an absolute star at the Patriot League. And people are looking at him now and being like, you know, this could be the next like Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Year, even after making that jump from the FCS to the FBS. And you see that in on the basketball side of things, that Spradlin was able to get guys to buy into his program at Morehead State, even though it was a smaller school. And I think it just kind of says a lot about who he is as a coach and as a person.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably continue to see a lot more stuff heat up on the basketball recruiting side of things. You know, as we get ready to talk about, you know, the spring game coming up on Saturday, you know, one thing I guess to kind of talk about too is the transfer portal opened up for football this week. You see a lot of guys from different places. How notable is it that we haven't seen any departures from JMU yet? I know it's likely to happen with at least a few people after the spring game, but, you know, not everybody waits for the spring game everywhere, as we've seen.
Yeah, I would definitely say it does say a lot that no one has necessarily entered so far, because the spring window is shorter than the fall or the winter window. It's like 2 weeks, I think. And so, yes, the fact that no one's jumped in quite yet is probably a good sign. And I, to be completely honest, I wouldn't expect too many people, especially when you compare it to what the how many people left in the winter. I think a lot of players have bought into Chesney style already, so I think you may see a few guys after the spring game jump in. I would say the safe bet is probably to assume it's going to be players who are looking at the roster and thinking, okay, I don't have a clear path to being a starter anytime soon, so I need to go find somewhere where I can get some playing time. But at the same time, I think, again, we've talked about it for several weeks, the transfer portal is one of those things that players need to look out for themselves and kind of do what's best for them at the right time. So you may see a few players jump in, but at the same time, this coaching staff, they've shown that they can recruit. So if players leave, I don't think they're really going to hesitate to go out and find a guy to replace them pretty quickly.
Yeah, and when they get on the field here for a spring game, I think it's going to be a completely different vibe. We talk about, you know, the different vibe, the different energy level at practices. It seems like the spring game is going to be very similar. You know, Cignetti kind of almost kind of viewed the spring game as, you know, a scrimmage that he was almost forced to let people in on and watch, and something he kind of had to do. You know, last year they end up kind of just calling it, you know, midway through. They've got a very planned out agenda for all Saturday across JMU athletics this time around. You know, they're promoting it throughout the athletic department. You know, start go to the lacrosse game early and go to the spring game baseball. You know, they're bringing Preston Spradlin in for spring game and baseball. They have things planned with the band. Seems like there's going to be a different atmosphere, more festive for spring football this year than in the past, especially the past, you know, few years with Cignetti.
Yeah, this is perfect timing to talk about this, because while we were recording this podcast, we officially got the press release about how the spring game will run. It came into my inbox at 1:15, and it is now 1:29. So they are planning a full four-quarter game. The first half will have regulation with 15 minutes in the first and 10 minutes in the second quarter. And they are expecting running clocks here and there, and they're going to have some competition periods where they're going one-on-one near the end zone. So it's going to be a fun little afternoon, I think. It will be a fun one to kind of – I'm actually as excited as I am to kind of watch this team put together drives. I'm kind of almost a little bit more excited to watch fans see the competition periods, because when – I've talked about on social media the high energy at practice. some of the most high energy times are when they're doing like these really quick competition things. We saw it last week at the coaches clinic, and it's a lot of fun to watch them. They have a lot of fun celebrating each other, going offense versus defense, and kind of seeing who comes out on top. So I think that's actually probably, in my personal opinion, what will be some of the really fun parts of the spring game coming up.
Yeah, I think obviously everybody's going to want to get their first look at Dylan Morris, playing quarterback at, somewhat of a live action scenario. I don't think he's going to be put in any danger, but
he's good. If you guys are wondering.
Yeah.
He's good.
That'll definitely be, everybody's kind of first look at there. But other guys you need to mention, Jacob Dobbs, the first look of, seeing him, kind of who I imagine is going to be the leader of the he's going to be the Dylan Morris version on defense, as far as, the leader and a guy for people to keep an eye on.
Jacob Dobbs, I think everybody just needs to watch him for a little bit, because like we've said before, he loves football, and he loves practicing, and that's the best time of his day. So it's just almost unreal to watch him on the field too, because I mean, there are still some guys on this staff that didn't know him ahead of time, and they're like, this is everything he was like broadcast to be. Like, he is that kind of high energy, really, really talented, really, really loves the game kind of player.
Yeah, and I think for me too, some of the guys I'm looking forward to seeing are maybe some of the younger guys who got playing time last year, see what kind of jump they've been able to make here in the past few months. Like, really looking forward to seeing, D'Angelo Pons. I'm sure we're going to be able to be challenged against these quarterbacks, and Dylan Morris and, everybody else coming back. Really looking forward to seeing what he can do if he's made a jump. Guys like Ymir Knight, there's a lot of them that have played some football for JMU, but I'm curious to see what the next level is going to be for those guys as they get more experience.
I will say the D'Angelo Pines one will be interesting because he has been limited throughout spring practice, but yesterday during Tuesday's practice was the first time we kind of saw him back running a little bit more of the drills. He was wearing a non-contact jersey, but I think he just burst onto the scene last year as a freshman corner, and so he will be a fun one to watch. I'm really excited to watch the running backs. That's a position that they really, really picked up some big name players. And I think everybody's kind of expecting the running back position to make a jump this year, especially with kind of how down it was last season. So that one will be a fun one to watch. And I think tight ends too. That's one that you have some good tight ends that were on the roster last season, but they didn't really see much of they saw times blocking, but they didn't see a lot of the passes because that was someone that Zach Horton was kind of that guy last year. So I think that will be another position that's really fun to watch and kind of see who steps up.
Yeah. And, we'll be back on Saturday for another kind of bonus episode of Purple Bowl Podcast. You'll hear all of our thoughts on, what we did see there from Bridgeforce Stadium. But in the meantime, you've been listening to our normal Wednesday episode. I'm Shane Metlin here again with Katie Harper. You've been listening to the Purple and Bold Podcast from the Daily News Record. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, whatever you do on the platform you listen to us, whether it's Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcast, do that. That'll help us out as we kind of try to build this podcast up a little bit. We'll get a little more resources for us so we can do more cool things with this. But in the meantime, I'm Shane Metlin with Katie Harper. And thanks for tuning in.